Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Friday, March 15th, 2024 edition of On Iowa Politics. On this week's episode, it wasn't exactly a funnel of love this week in the Iowa legislature. Get it? Get it? Like tunnel of love, everyone? But funnel of love? All right. An effort is afoot to take another crack at a state tax incentive program for movie productions, and Congress takes on TikTok. Hi, everyone. I'm Aaron Murphy, the Des Moines Bureau Chief for the Gazette in Cedar Rapids. With me this week are Gazette Deputy Bureau Chief Tom Barton. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Aaron.
Lee Des Moines Bureau Chief Caleb McCullough is with us. Hello, Caleb.
Hello, Aaron.
And we also have Jared McNett of the Sioux City Journal along for the ride. Hello, Jared.
May thy knife never chip and shatter, Aaron.
Oh, is that a dune?
Yes, it is. It's a dune. It is a dune.
I still haven't seen it. I'm frustrated. I got to get out.
Got to get on that.
Yeah. That's when I got to see in the theaters, obviously. All right. We start this week in the Iowa legislature, which just reached its second funnel deadline. Super quick explainer for anyone who needs it. Get ready with your notepads. Here we go. By the end of this week, any bill passed by the Iowa House had to have also been passed through a Senate committee and vice versa. Any bills that did not reach that legislative threshold are technically quote-unquote dead for the remainder of the 2024 session. The obligatory caveats here are that the funnel deadlines do not apply to tax policy or budget/spending bills, and no bill is truly dead because leaders, if they so wish, can resurrect them by using any number of legislative tools and tricks at their disposal. As for the second funnel of the 2024 session, which just concluded, to me, this was a weird one. I can't remember a more tepid pace for a funnel week. Usually the legislative schedules are absolutely insane. They're so jam-packed. And that really was not the case at all this week. In fact, I dare say it was borderline manageable for those of us who were covering the funnel. I can't verify this with anything even resembling hard data, but it sure felt, again, to me, like the number of significant bills that did not survive the funnel were much greater than the same number in years past. So there were more bills that died, it seems like, this year than in previous years. I was kind of glad, and not for any political reasons, just because of experience reasons. So we're recording here Thursday afternoon. Earlier today, we were talking to legislative leaders, and Iowa Senator Pam Yoakum, a Democrat from Dubuque who's been around a long time, she said something similar, that it's one of the more unusual funnel weeks that she's been around. So that kind of helped confirm my hypothesis. So Caleb, what was your big takeaway from funnel week two?
Yeah, I think the big takeaway was that there was quite a few bills, mostly House bills, that went over to the Senate that then died in committee in the Senate. And just the disparity, we were talking about this earlier today, about the number of bills that each chamber passed out. It's something like 140 bills the House passed out of their chamber, and the Senate passed out 41 bills, and the Senate did not approve of very many of the House's bills that they sent over. So, and you know, the kind of attitude or the atmosphere that I'm feeling is that, and the leaders, the Republican leaders of both chambers aren't really trying to hide that they're not really happy with each other. And you know, Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitaker said today, talking with us, that you know, that disparity, that approach is intentional of the number of bills they passed, and he said this week, you know, he doesn't think that that the legislature needs to be passing very many bills this year. You know, they're really taking the small government commitment to heart this year in the Senate, and so it was kind of a situation of them just seeing all the stuff the House sent them and saying that's all right, but we're gonna focus on the stuff that we want. And in the House, you know, the Republicans seem to be fairly frustrated that their bills that they passed out that they think were, you know, good ideas, good priorities, good policy, did not even, you know, get much of a consideration at all in the Senate. And so that's kind of been my takeaway, is that we've got a few things that are, you know, especially the AEA bill, of course, is really holding up a lot of the attention. And it just doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of interest from the Senate in taking up very many of these House bills.
Yeah, that's and it was interesting too today, Thursday, Caleb, and you, I got some of the secondhand because you guys were there, because I was covering something else. But the little bit of the disconnect too on that relationship between the Senate and House Republicans right now, between what the top leaders were telling us, Senator Whitfer and Speaker Grassley, kind of portraying, and correct me if I'm wrong, but portraying an all is well, this is the normal process, versus when you talk to the committee level leaders, there was clearly some frustration and across the chamber. So it was kind of different, interesting to hear the differences at the different levels of leadership there. Do I portray that right, Caleb?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the leaders definitely said, you know, that they have a good working relationship, and that they're engaging in all these conversations. But at the same time, I think, you know, there was still a attitude from, I think, House Speaker Pat Grassley that there were some of those bills that they advanced, sent over, that he was not happy that didn't get much consideration. So.
Yeah, that was clearly the case. And you really honed in on it. I heard that a number of times from a number of committee level leaders about the Senate being frustrated by the volume of bills that the House sent across the chamber. Tom, how about you? Took a good chunk of what was interesting here. What else stood out to you as you covered Funnel Week?
Yeah, I guess I'm going to echo Caleb a little bit here. The thing that stood out to me most is just kind of the different priorities that House Republicans and Senate Republicans have. But then in addition to that, the fact that you had bills that seemed to be overwhelmingly popular and which had bipartisan support, not being able to get traction either in the House or the Senate. So a couple of examples, you know, there was legislation expanding medical coverage for firefighters with cancer that stalled in the Senate and apparently is not moving forward. It passed out of the House, I believe overwhelmingly. I can't remember what the exact vote was on that bill. Maybe Kayla remembers. But I mean, it was one that had a lot of support. You know, we continue to see a bill that would provide birth control in Iowa without a prescription, which passed the Senate again overwhelmingly last year, not moving in the House. And even the House bill, which takes language, I think, the governor has proposed, and this has been a top legislative priority for her for several years now. That's not moving forward. That's not advancing. There are still those within the House Republican caucus who can't get on board with providing birth control without a prescription. Again, you know, it's kind of somewhat remarkable to me, with this being a priority of the governor and a priority of Republican leadership in the House and the Senate, and something that again has bipartisan support, can't get past the finish line because of a small group of essentially social conservatives in the House who, you know, are opposed to birth control and see some forms of birth control as being, you know, somewhat equivalent to abortion medication, arguing that some forms of birth control, you know, still terminate a pregnancy. And so in their mind, you know, that's just a line, I guess, that they're not willing to cross or something that they just, you know, cannot support. You know, we also saw a bill, again, a proposal, a legislative priority from the governor about extending paid family leave for state employees, stalled out, you know, doesn't seem to be going anywhere right now. And then also, strikingly, and Aaron, you wrote about this earlier this week, various immigration bills, both those from House Republicans and Senate Republicans, not really being able to gain any traction for one reason or the other in the chambers, you know, and immigration being a major Republican talking point. And, you know, whether it be a House Republican proposal related to creating a state crime and cracking down on smuggling, you know, not being able to get traction in the Senate, whereas, and it may have this mistake, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you know, the Senate proposal would to require e-verify
That's correct.
For businesses, you know, not being able to get any support in the House. And so it's just, again, striking to me just this level of disparity that there seems to be, even on policy and topics that, you know, again, seem to have widespread support in some cases across, you know, both sides of the aisle, and ones that, you know, seem to be priorities for leadership and the governor, they can't, I guess, get together to reconcile their differences and, you know, again, get them across the finish line.
Yep. And I looked it up, that firefighters bill, that it would increase the number of cancers that are covered by their retirement benefits, passed the House 96-0, Tom, to your point, and didn't even get a subcommittee hearing in the Senate. They assigned it and didn't even get a sub. And that was an interesting one. And Senator Whitfer was asked about that today. And if I understand right, the answer was, I trust the committee process and that there's a reason that they didn't pass that bill. So we don't know why, just through the process, they decided not to. And you know, I wanted to add too, you mentioned the behind the counter birth control without a prescription one. We were just talking about that one too on Press Row with some of our colleagues at the other outlets up at the State House. And that one's one of those interesting ones where if that got called up for debate and a vote in the House right now, it would pass with a pretty wide margin when you add in almost all, if not all, the Democrats would vote for it. So if they called that bill up for a House vote right now, it would pass comfortably. But it doesn't get called up because the majority party doesn't have majority support just within its caucus, which is maddening, I'm sure, to a lot of people to hear something like that for people who, but look, and that's not a, that's a majority, that's not an RD thing, that's a majority party thing.
Well, so do you know the history or the backstory there? Was that a situation where House Republicans got burned by Democrats on, you know, trying to pass a bill where they didn't have majority support in their caucus and were hoping that Democrats would help them out across the aisle?
That's a good question. Like, I don't know that there's a specific instance that, like, a specific bill that made that a thing. It's just, as long as I've covered the legislatures, that's just kind of always been standard operating practice for the leadership, is a bill doesn't come up for a floor vote unless our caucus, a majority of our caucus, supports it. That's just the way it's always been. It's a to the electoral victors go the spoils kind of thing. I guess we set the agenda and we're not looking for your votes to help pass bills.
Caleb mentioned the AEA bill earlier. Do we think at all that the slowdown could maybe somewhat be owed to the legislature already having to wrangle something as contentious as that? Because obviously we spent plenty of time talking about, even by the standards of contentious legislation, that was especially fraught.
100%, great question. 100% without a doubt.
That's been what we've been hearing, is that, I mean, and even, you know, Woodver said that today, that's been taking up, you know, not that that's what's been slowing things down, but that's been taking up so much of his attention and so much of the work in the of Senate Republicans. And so, yeah, I mean, it that is certainly the major factor in why we, you know, we've seen the slowdown, and additionally why we haven't seen you know, Senate Republicans pass school funding bill yet, because that is holding up what they decide to do when it comes to school funding. And so it really has put a big standstill on everything.
And the difference, the unique thing about this AEA bill, because there's always big bills that take up a lot of oxygen for a little bit of time at the Capitol during a session. But this one is unique in how big it is, how it's a governor priority, but then how poorly it was received. And so now we have a bill that the majority party still feels they need to get done, but the process has been much more extensive than other examples from previous years, because they've had to basically start from scratch and there's still disagreement about how to do it. So that's what's unique about this one, is it's been such a heavy lift just from writing the bill itself. You know, the big bills of the past, ESAs, they had that bill written. It was ready to go. There was only minor tweaks they made to it, if anything, to get it across the finish line. The government reorganization bill, I could go back to all the way back to Medicaid expansion, the gas tax expansion. The bills were controversial, but the bills themselves were ready to go. They were in the form that they needed to be. And so the debate you know, it sucked the oxygen out of the room, but it was for a short amount of time. This is taking up so much time because they can't even get the bill to a place where they can debate and vote on it. It's taking forever just to do that. So that's a great question, Jared. Piggybacking off of that, I don't want to put you on the spot here, Jared, because you're not buried neck deep in this like Tom, Caleb, and I are, but I also wanted to give you a turn at the mic in case there's anything. Is there anything else from watching the funnel from afar that struck you?
Well, I guess I was maybe curious too, if, you know, because I asked about the AEA thing, is there any possibility that it being an election year factors in at all? Or do you think that's maybe kind of like a very small chunk of the pie?
Well, with the AEA bill specifically or more broadly speaking?
Just more broadly speaking.
I think it's hard to ignore that that's a possibility, that's at least part of the equation. You know, it's interesting. We had in one bill we haven't brought up yet, I don't think, I apologize if I missed it, is the fetal homicide bill that became a discussion about whether it would impact fertility treatments like IVF, in vitro fertilization. Senator Brad Zahn, the Republican who pulled that bill on the Senate side, was asked that very question on that bill specifically. You know, did politics, this is an election year, this is an issue that clearly Democrats are going to hit Republicans on the campaign trail. Was there any political calculations in pulling this bill? And he take him at his response. And what he said was, no, I had nothing to do with that. I had issues with the bill and that's why it's pulled. But I think that's a fair question that, you know, politics, it's hard to look at things that go on up there and not see that politics is at least a little bit of a motivating factor. And it's also interesting, and we wondered this going back to the caucuses, how much of the working relationships up there would have been maybe dinged a little bit by the caucus season and the supports for the different candidates and the Trump and DeSantis people and the Haley people, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know that I can't sit here and say right now that, hey, this is clearly happening because he was a Trump guy and he was a DeSantis guy and now they're not getting along. You know, you wonder if something like that's still lingering. And then, yeah, whenever there's an election on the ballot a few months later, it's fair to wonder whether that's a motivating factor in moments up there.
And this is pure speculation, so I'll put my flashing caveat here that I'm not saying that this is anybody's motivation, but it's also, you know, worth noting that this week is the deadline to file for candidates to file to run for office. And, you know, we're expecting if the Senate AEA bill does come up next week, angry people won't be able to primary candidates who maybe vote against it or vice versa. So, I mean, that is something that, you know, has been thought about, at least. I don't know if that's the reason, but it's a thought.
A lot of non-competitive elections, it's looking like so far in Northwest Iowa, unless a lot of people file before 5 p.m. Friday. Yeah.
I didn't see a long line outside of the Secretary of State's office before I left today. So
something it wasn't necessarily funnel week related, but something I took note of in the Capitol notebook yesterday. There's a plug for people to read that. It was regarding the closure of the Tyson plant in Perry. And it was about Senate Democrats urging action on that. What was kind of the gist of that one?
Yeah, and we got a little more details on that today. Now, that part of the problem, one of the more interesting parts of that was the aforementioned Senator Yoakum said earlier this week that she planned to introduce a leadership bill. But when I asked for details of that, they said, stay tuned, still working on it. And that's what we got today. So the primarily their focus is around the unemployment benefits in the state and the recent changes that reduced the window for which people can get unemployment benefits and the bill. And Tom, you were in this press conference with me, so correct me if I miss anything here, would basically, just for the folks impacted in Perry, would expand those benefits back out, increase the amount of time that they could get those benefits to help the community, you know, people who are obviously going to be without a job and will need some time to look for a job. You know, they talked about some other things. Senator Trongaria talked about releasing emergency funds to help out the community, but the unemployment benefits seem to be the focus. And did I describe that correctly, Tom?
I'd have to go back and look at my notes. I can't remember if the leadership bill that Senator Yoakum proposed, if it would be specific just to the Perry community and the Tyson plant closing there, or if it'd be just more broadly that when there is a plant closure, that this would extend the amount of weeks that impacted employees could collect unemployment benefits. And Senator Yoakum referenced the bill that was passed and signed into law 2 years ago in 2022 that cut unemployment benefits in the state, limited the amount of time essentially that you can collect unemployment.
I was going to say, one of the reasons I was just so struck by that is because in 22, when Tyson closed offices in our area, there were more than a few candidates that brought that issue up repeatedly in the fall when they were running for election. So I'd be curious to see if that happens in that neck of the woods come the fall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Good question. And look, that area has got some competitive districts too. So that could be interesting. And I'll bet you're, I wonder if you're right, Tom, because that was a point that the Democrats made during that debate earlier this week when they said, look, we had this amendment back when we debated that bill that said at the time, let's fine, you're going to do this, but let's exempt plant closures. And keep them available for the longer period in those cases. And obviously that was defeated on a party line vote. So that may be what it was. All right. So the funnel week is done and now we're on to, what's left: tax bills, budget bills, and the about four dozen bills on the, unfinished business calendar, which is something that Tom and Caleb and I are rolling our eyes about and trying to figure out. That's the for the uninitiated, that's the what leadership does when there's a bill that didn't survive the funnel, but they want to be able to call up later, and so they place it on the what's called the unfinished business calendar. So it basically defeats the whole purpose of the funnel and keeps bills alive that didn't pass, and there's just a ton of them on that list this week. So we'll see how many of those get brought back up down the road. But let's move on from the funnel and talk about one more bill that came up this week that was interesting in its own right. And it would create another state tax incentive program for movie productions, the film in Iowa, the first such program, which operated for three whole years back in 2007 to 2009. Well, let's just say it did not go so well. 80% of the state tax incentives awarded by the State Economic Development Agency that ran that program were done so improperly, according to a state audit. And the ensuing legal claims resulted in criminal convictions for at least seven people associated either with the movie productions or that state agency, including the director of the program. So that's the bar to beat for this second go around. Pretty low one. Legislators that we heard from and talked to this week, and again, wow, this is Pam Yoakum's podcast. I'm going to refer to her a third time here because I asked her about that today. They're all optimistic that the state has learned its lesson from that previous program, and they insist that this new one is better constructed and will have better safeguards against that kind of fraud. Jared, you're our resident movie guy. What does your gut tell you if this program comes to pass? Is this particular sequel destined to be more like The Empire Strikes Back or Caddyshack 2?
That's a really sad sequel to even have to think about Caddyshack 2 there. Well, you know, the array
I actually tell people, I use it for the joke, but I actually tell people it doesn't exist. What Caddyshack 2? There was no Caddyshack 2.
That's a good way to proceed.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the array of movies to film in Iowa isn't the most robust a state could have. You've got the best Iowa-based movie ever, The Straight Story, the wonderful 2010 adaptation of The Crazies, the Bridges of Madison County, and then something called Field of Dreams. Something like this could help land a few more splashy productions. And, you know, movie set location tourism is a thing. We're actually going to be having such a thing in the form of an event this summer for the 40th anniversary of Children of the Corn. So that's going to be like a local, you know, revenue generator kind of thing well after when the movie was filmed here. The thing I would note, though, is that even if, you know, the incentive worked swimmingly, is all of the neighboring states have similar programs in place. And some of them, like in Illinois and Minnesota, are pretty generous. So it would be really tough for Iowa to have to compete with that if it wanted to land some kind of prestigious sorts of productions.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And that's a good point to bring up. The one thing that legislators said this week is that, but from a different perspective, they said, hey, look, all these other states have this. It's like literally 80% of the states, 3/4 of the states, it's somewhere in there, have some kind of incentive program. We're one of the few that don't. So at the very least, I'm guessing their pitch is we need this to at least get to that level footing with them from an incentive program and then be able to compete whether they want to come to Iowa or not, independent of that. So I think that's the argument and the case they would make. But yeah, it'll be interesting. And you're right. I mean, look, Bridges of Madison County tours are still a thing. Heck, Music Man has a big museum in Clear yeah. Lake, and that wasn't even shot there. It's just about, you know.
In Mason City. Mason, not,
I'm
not
sorry,
in,
Mason
not
City.
Not in Clear Lake. Oh
my gosh.
That was dangerous.
Ooh. I mean, I've been there, and it's one of my favorite movie musicals ever, and I still said the wrong thing for some reason. I don't know why. Sorry, Mason City, Music City. I gotcha. I got you back. Don't get me in trouble. See, I made a reference. That gets me back in their good graces. Okay, moving on. Finally this week, we shift from the Iowa Capitol to the U.S. Capitol, where the House passed a bill that would require the social media giant TikTok to split from its Chinese parent company or face a ban in the U.S. TikTok, for those unfamiliar, is the popular social media platform that is also the reason I have to tell all my work stories to my wife and daughter twice. Tom, the entire Iowa delegation in the U.S. voted for this bill that takes on TikTok. And it's not just because they're Republican. A whole lot of Democrats voted for it, too. It was a pretty strong bipartisan support for this one. What were some of the explanations? Did the delegation have anything interesting to say about those votes?
So this is something that Iowa Congresswoman Ashley Henson has been passionate about. She co-led that piece of legislation and sits on the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party that originated the bill. The way that she framed it is that TikTok needs to cut ties with its parent company based in Beijing, ByteDance, arguing that its Chinese parent has ties with the Chinese Communist Party. There's concerns there that, again, even though TikTok is incorporated in the United States, that its ties to ByteDance have triggered fears that the app could be weaponized by the Chinese, by Chinese government officials to snoop on Americans and shape their political views by promoting and spreading misinformation or disinformation. The company says it has never, would never share U.S. user data with the Chinese government and disputes claims of any foreign interference or influence. Again, Iowa's Ashley Hinton and other Republican members of Iowa's delegation argue that TikTok could be used as a platform by the Chinese to essentially snoop on American users, and, you know, claims that it puts national security in jeopardy, that it's, you know, collecting your data, it's surveilling behavior, it's monitoring user habits, and is negatively influencing U.S. youth with what Iowa U.S. Senator Joni Ernst says is an endless stream of addictive content. What's interesting is you had former President Donald Trump, who during his presidency tried to ban TikTok, but now is walking back from that, posting on True Social and giving interviews, arguing that getting rid of TikTok would only help rival social media companies like Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram, calling Meta or Facebook a true enemy of the people. The presumptive 2024 Republican presidential nominee, it should be noted, launched True Social to rival Facebook and former social media platform Twitter, which is now X, after Trump was banned from the sites. And Trump could potentially profit If the company goes public as planned, I think either this year or maybe next year. It's interesting in that Trump's opposition, you know, didn't really seem to sway Iowa's Republicans. Their minds were made up. They were pretty set and intent on passing that bill. And it looks like it's got, at least as of now, tentative support in the Senate from Iowa Republican Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst.
Yeah, so I'm going to admit here, I'm just old enough to not be on TikTok. My daughter sends me videos constantly. In fact, I got one as I sat down here this afternoon that I still need to look at. It's a joke about the daily New York Times puzzles that we play together. I don't want to force anybody out because I don't want you to feel like you have to say you're on TikTok if you don't want to. Are any of you guys want to say you're on TikTok and are you brainwashed by it?
See, I'm in an ideal situation because I'm not on TikTok, but my girlfriend is. So I only get to see the very best TikToks and don't have to see a bunch of chaff, you know, scattered amongst the wheat.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. Yeah, okay, go ahead, Caleb.
I'm in the same boat, Jared. I am anti-TikTok, but only because I know that I would be brainwashed if I had it. Because I've already been brainwashed by Twitter and everything else. So I've drawn a line in the sand on TikTok. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I'm in the similar spot as you, Jared, as I joked, my wife and daughter are both on it. So I'm not on it, but I only get sent the funniest, cute little pet videos and inside jokes between my daughter and I. So I don't get all the political stuff. Bailey, do you mind if I put you on the spot and ask if you're an active TikToker?
Yeah, I'm not an active TikToker anymore. I did have TikTok. I would make some occasionally, mostly a viewer, but I find that a lot of the good TikToks find their way onto Instagram Reels. I'm more of an Instagram-centric person.
Yep. Yeah, that is interesting how that's, I would agree with that. I get a lot of Instagram shares from my wife and daughter too, and a lot of times it's a TikTok video.
Yeah, that's I'm glad Bailey pointed that out because that is something that's funny that's about going after TikTok is so much of the content migrates to other platforms anyway. So like how would you go after that?
I guess maybe the argument is, well, that's still an improvement if it's not owned by a Chinese company, maybe, but it's a fair point, like you said, that it's not like that content goes away. It just goes somewhere else. All right. Well, hey, that was fun. Let's talk about social media again. It makes me sound relevant to the kids. But that's it for this episode on Iowa Politics. If you're not already, please subscribe to us on your streaming service of choice. And you can also find the podcast each week on your preferred Gazette or Lean newspaper website. And now that you've listened to the On Iowa Politics podcast, make sure you're also subscribed to the On Iowa Politics newsletter, where every morning in your inbox, you'll receive all the latest politics and government coverage from our team. You can subscribe to that free newsletter at the Gazette's website, thegazette.com. And lastly, don't forget that the work of everyone you heard here today can be found on the pages and websites of the Quad City Times, Muscatine Journal, Cedar Rapids Gazette, Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier, Mason City Globe Gazette, Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil, and the Sioux City Journal. Shameless plug, watch this week, and especially all this funnel week talk that we just talked about. We'll have all kinds of stories in the coming days, kind of wrapping up what happened this week and looking ahead to the rest of the session too. So grab all those print editions and all those websites and keep an eye out. I See You by Silence is playing us out this week. If you know an Iowa band or musician who should be featured on the podcast, please send us a sound file. For Tom Barton, Caleb McCullough, Jared McNett, and our producer, Bailey Cheehan, I'm Aaron Murphy. Thanks for listening. My face like up. Can I go? So I-